Welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast, the audio version of the Josh Meister's Lost blog, which you can find at thelostmeister.blogspot.com. Hey everybody, this is the Josh Meister and welcome back to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast. We just got finished watching season 6, episode 4, The Substitute, and a couple of people are called in tonight, congested as usual, aka in real life, Alex. How's it going, Alex?
It's pretty good. I've just been making some jam here.
Kind of an inside joke. We'll get to that later. And also, I think for the first time called in on the show, we have Court Haven. How's it going?
Yeah, doing pretty good. First time caller here, just trying to digest the episode and what we saw tonight.
Or glad to have you. All right, so before we dive too much into this episode, there are a couple of, one little thing I think we'll start out the show with. I heard that Jorge Garcia is doing a podcast, and he actually recorded the episodes for it months ago. And the deal is that he, as soon as he got a hold of the scripts for each of the episodes for the season, he and a friend of his would record a little bit about, you know, their kind of initial reactions after reading the script, but they're not publishing the episodes until after the show airs so that they're not spoiling anything for anybody. So it's kind of cool, and you can, I've listened to the first, episode and a half kind of, and you can find it at GeronimoJacksBeard.blogspot.com. So it's not Geronimo Jackson, and it's not beer as in Dharma beer, but GeronimoJacksBeard.blogspot.com. And there's no apostrophe in there, of course. And they are also on Twitter, GJacksBeard. So it's the letter G and then JACKSBARD on Twitter if you want to check that out. So, all right. So that's, and as far as I know, that's the only podcast that any cast members have put out, obviously, other than the official Lost podcast. So that's kind of a new angle, a new take on the episodes. Although, in my opinion, you know, based on listening to the first episode, it really ends up being kind of similar to what we see when, you know, the episodes where people are analyzing it after watching the show. But I think it's probably worth listening to because they may end up having some interesting insights from the script that may or may not make it to the show and things like that. You know, having the script, there will probably be some things that they'll get a little bit of inside knowledge on that we may not directly get from the show. So that's worth checking out. All right. So let's go ahead and dive right into this episode. We start out in 2004. Locke is getting out of his car in a wheelchair. And I don't know if I just missed something, but who was driving the car and why didn't they help John get out? I mean, was he, you know, in his wheelchair in front of the steering wheel and then he wheels over to the side of his van? I didn't really get that. But anyway, he was having a problem with his lift and trying to get out of the car. And he ends up crashing face first on the ground. And then who comes out, you know, into the yard to help him but Helen? So apparently they're living together and they're planning to get married. And John told Helen that he was going to a conference. He didn't tell her that he was going on this on a walkabout. So that was kind of an interesting thing. Going to 2007 on the island, we see the smoke monster's view as it travels across the island. We hear its sound effects and things like that. It goes past the barracks where some music is playing. And of course, you know, it seemed like something that probably was happening, you know, in the current time. And that was probably Sawyer listening to music. And then the smoke monster continues on this journey and sees a knife in the jungle and stops suddenly. And now we get a view of the smoke monster in the form of Locke. So apparently it changed itself into John's appearance instead of the smoke appearance, apparently instantaneously. And John, or fake Locke, you know, picks up the knife and, cuts Richard down from a tree. He'd been apparently hanging there. Locke had it seems, tied him up in the tree to keep him out of the way. In 2004, in the flash sideways or alternate timeline, Randy says to Locke, "Welcome back, Colonel." And so, well, once again, we have Randy Nations as the boss of Locke. And it's kind of funny because, of course, we know that he has also been Hurley's boss at Mr. Cluck's Chicken Shack in the past. But Randy is the same person, you know, seems to have the same personality. He's still a jerk, just like he was in the original timeline. And we find out that John went to Sydney on the company's dime, and he was supposed to have gone to a conference, but instead he chose to do this walkabout, and so Randy fires John on the spot. In 2007, Fake Locke says, let's see, was it, I didn't write down who actually said this. Maybe it was Richard who said this. John's a candidate, or at least he was a candidate. Yeah.
That was
fake.
Richard and Sawyer.
Yeah, no, looking at the rest of the conversation, that was Fake Locke said that to Richard Alpert.
Oh, okay.
Because the next line is, you know, from Richard is, what do you mean a candidate? And I thought that was crazy because Alana knows, you know, I mean, Alana and even Bram. I mean, Bram just seems like a, you know, kind of a nobody. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he less important than Alana anyway. And, you know, and Bram and Alana both knew what it meant to be a candidate. You know, they were talking about Frank possibly being a candidate. And so it's really weird to hear Richard kind of not knowing what's going on and not even being familiar with this idea, even though he seems to have been Jacob's kind of right-hand man on the island. And so Fake Locke tells Richard, I would never have treated you like that, kept you in the dark. I would have treated you with respect. And I found that line to be incredibly ironic because, of course, Fake Locke has just kept Richard tied up in a tree right before he says, oh, I would never have treated you like that. First of all, he treated him badly. He says, I never would have kept you in the dark. Well, he kind of literally kept him in the dark by bundling him up and tying him up in the tree where he couldn't see anything. And he said, I would have treated you with respect, which, again, he absolutely did not treat Richard with respect in this instance. So a lot of irony there with his remarks. Fake Locke wants Richard to go with him, and Richard refuses. Next, Fake Locke sees a boy in the jungle and seems surprised to see him. And this was really interesting, and I think we've got kind of a few different angles on this discussion, but I thought, you know, when I first saw this, I thought the smoke monster was the only one who is the source of apparitions on the island, with maybe the possible exception of Walt. We never really got a full explanation for when Walt seemed to appear in the jungle to Shannon and so forth. But, you know, so we don't really know whether that was the smoke monster or not. But in virtually every other instance, we seem to have, you know, been led to think that all these other apparitions from their past or, you know, dead people that we see on the island are the smoke monster. And apparently it wasn't in this case because, you know, of course, Fake Locke is the smoke monster and he was surprised to see this boy in the middle of the jungle. So I don't know. I mean, there's some different theories on this, and you know, I don't know if do any of you guys have any wild theories on who this boy is. My next thought was that it was Jacob. And anybody have any different ideas on that?
No, my first initial thought was that, I mean, I guess it had to be Jacob. And I know in the previous conversation that we had, you pointed out something very interesting about him having like the red forearms and that kind of made me second guess. I'm not sure. If not Jacob, I guess my second guess would possibly be Aaron, but it would be a little bit far-fetched.
Yeah, and that's an interesting theory. And Jack from the Lost podcast with Jay and Jack was actually here a little while ago. I guess he still is here in the chat. And he shared that theory too, which I hadn't even thought of that, but it is interesting, and I guess it's plausible enough. It would have to probably be some sort of a time traveling or, you know, maybe interdimensional traveling Aaron, because, you know, Aaron obviously is not is not anywhere near that old at this point, but it is interesting. I mean, as far as the way that they look, it's a possibility.
Yeah. I did see some physical resemblations, or I'm not even sure if that's a word, but between Jacob and the little blonde boy that we did see, like as far as like around the eyebrow area and the mouth and the nose, it did heavily resemble Jacob, I thought.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I thought too. The boy, kind of an interesting thing, and this is what Alex was joking about the jam, but the boy seems to have blood on his arms when Locke first sees him. Now, and then Locke goes chasing him through the jungle, and then he doesn't have blood on his arms after that. But the boy is kind of standing there with his arms out, kind of to the side, and he appears to have blood on his arms. And, you know, that's kind of an interesting thing. And that, you know, is that supposed to lead us to think that it's Jacob because Jacob was just killed? You know, is it supposed to lead us, to think maybe it could be Aaron? I mean, we've seen, you know, Claire, you know, she dug her fingernails into her arms when, someone was trying to kidnap her baby and so forth. You know, obviously there's some blood when a baby is born, and Aaron, you know, was born on the island. You know, of course it was just on his forearms, so I don't know. In any case, I tend to relate this more again with Jacob. The boy seemed to look an awful lot like Jacob, I thought. And what an interesting thing, regardless of who it is. I mean, this random character shows up who, is a surprise to the smoke monster. And again, I mean, it's kind of a new revelation, even the fact that there can be these other, you know, apparitions that are not caused by the smoke monster. So, anyway, there's some different interesting theories about that, and I'm sure we'll find out more and probably see this boy again in upcoming episodes. And there's a little bit more about him later in this one as well. Flyboy Patrick talks about the casting information for this boy. And do you have a link to the casting call information?
Yeah, I would just say that no spoilers here, but I don't know if he means IMDb or casting, but I get, oh, then.
Okay, so it comes from Lostpedia. There's an article that for now is called Teenage Boy, which you can look up on Lostpedia. we'll probably save this for later when we get into spoilers, because it could potentially be a spoiler. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. Okay. So the next thing we've got is Ilana is crying in Jacob's home in the base of the Towerette statue, or the foot statue actually now. And Ben enters and tells Ilana that that Locke killed Jacob, and that or you know, the fake Locke, whatever, and that he kicked Jacob's body into the fire when that part of it was true. And so it's interesting what she does. She picks up some of the ashes from the fireplace and puts them in a bag. And, you know, of course we know that the smoke monster is, you know, it can't pass over ashes, it seems like. they create some sort of a physical barrier that the smoke monster cannot pass. And, you know, this kind of made me wonder, with Ilana picking up these ashes and putting them in a bag, are these the same ashes that they're using to defend against the man in black or the smoke monster? It kind of made me wonder, you know, did they take Jacob's ashes back in time somehow, and that is what they're using to keep the smoke monster at bay, or to keep, you know, to keep him trapped on the island, or to keep him trapped, you know, wherever he may be. Okay, so let's see. Ilana.
Oh, excuse me. You there, Josh?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Discord Haven. I was thinking that's not a bad thought. I was trying to get a better look at the color of the ashes. I'm not sure if they were white or not.
But yeah, they looked sort of light colored, like white ashes, probably.
All right, because in that case, I don't know if this could be a possibility, but maybe they were spreading around the ashes of possibly Jacob, since he has been represented in all white. Maybe for some reason, those ashes being around him in a circle would keep the smoke monster away.
Yeah, you know, that's really interesting. A couple of people, by the way, in the chat agreed that the ashes were white. Josh Spivy from the Lost Flashbacks podcast says they definitely looked like the same ones we've been seeing. It seems like that could be a plausible theory anyway about the origin of the ashes and why it is that that the smoke monster is afraid of them or can't pass them. Okay, so let's see. We'll move on here. Alana tells Ben the reason why Fake Locke carried Richard out into the jungle is that, quote, he's recruiting. And there are a number of revelations that come from Alana in this episode that just kind of, I'm like, how does Alana know so much about the Man in Black? You know, how is it that she has so much information about him? You'll see what I mean, you know, when we kind of get into the discussion of some other comments that she makes to Ben later. But it really makes me wonder, you know, how come, again, she has so much information that Richard doesn't have? It's very strange to me. So Fake Locke, right after that, shows up at the barracks and greets Sawyer. And apparently this is his first person that he's trying to recruit. And Sawyer says, I thought you were dead. And Fake Locke says, I am. Sawyer says, you sure as hell ain't John Locke, because Locke was scared. But you ain't scared. Now, my wife and I both thought the same thing at the same time. Okay, here we have a drunken Sawyer, and he's perceptive enough to tell that this isn't John Locke. That's interesting. But in any case, so, and Fake Locke says, what if I told you that I was the person who could answer the most important question in the world? Why are you on this island? And then kind of James comes up with this idea, you know, he says, well, I'm here because the plane crashed and because the helicopter was too heavy and someone had to bail out. And Fake Locke tells him, that's not why you're here. And if you come with me, I can prove it.
Yeah, and I thought that was amazing. And that's one of the things that really engaged me into the episode. And I think kind of really held me on, because it maybe want to follow the journey and follow where Sawyer was going as a character as well, to follow Fake Locke.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see kind of what all this recruitment means as far as the battle between, you know, Jacob and his nemesis on the island. Okay, so 2004, Locke tries to scratch a yellow Hummer who parked next to him. And it turns out, of course, that that's Hurley's yellow Hummer. And Hugo Reyes, you know, comes out and he introduces himself to John Locke. And by the way, the fact that Locke was not able to scratch it, he tried to use his lift for, you know, the wheelchair lift from his car to scratch the Hummer. And of course it failed. It wouldn't scratch it. And this made me think back to, you know, Hurley's comment that, you know, he's the luckiest man alive in the season premiere. And so here we have more evidence of that. And I thought that was kind of funny. Now, at the same time, you know, we know earlier in the episode that Locke's, the button on Locke's wheelchair lift wasn't working quite right. But it was really, really funny to see this, you know, instance of Hurley being having this extra luck and not getting his car all scratched up. So Hugo Reyes introduces himself to John Locke. Locke says that he was just fired by Randy Nations, and Hugo says that Randy is a douche. And it made me think, of course, you know, apparently in this timeline, he must have also worked for Randy if he knows him that well. Or I guess it could just be that, you know, he knows Randy because Randy's an employee of his. But in any case, Hurley says, I own a temp agency too. And he gives Locke the number. And he says, tell them Hugo sent you and to hook you up with a new job pronto. And he says something like, and chin up, it'll work out. So here we have Hugo being this cool, you know, good Samaritan guy. He doesn't get him his job back with Randy, but he puts him in the right direction, getting him connected with a temp agency, which he also owns, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I thought that was a cool sense. And also, it was cool seeing how they connected off-island now. I thought that was pretty pertinent, just kind of showing how it might be some of these losses' fate to actually connect off-island when we go back to that whole faith versus free will choice.
Right. It is interesting how they keep running into each other. And, of course, we find out yet another person that Locke runs into a little bit later in the episode, too. So in 2007 on the island, Ilana tells Sun that if Jin's alive, he'll be at the temple. And Sun says, what about John? We need to bury him. And it's kind of funny because Ilana sort of makes a face, or, you know, she kind of grunts about it or something. It's almost like they don't really seem to like the idea of having to bury John Locke for some reason. But we jump to fake Locke. He sees the boy again, and I wrote in my notes, he looks like a young Jacob. Sawyer sees him too. So this is not just in, you know, the smoke monster, Man in Black's imagination. And so fake Locke chases the boy and falls down. The boy says, this is interesting. You know the rules. You can't kill him. And so I'm sure there's going to be at least a couple of different theories about who this person is that the boy is telling the Man in Black that he can't kill. My initial reaction was that he was talking about Jacob, meaning, you know, Jacob's not really dead. You know, I'm Jacob. I'm the boy, you know, that looks like him. You can't really kill Jacob. You know the rules. And my wife's take on that was that the boy was talking about Sawyer. You know the rules. You can't kill Sawyer. And after Richard Alpert's comment a little bit later, I kind of tend to think that my wife was probably right on that he was talking about Sawyer. But it is interesting, though, you know, that we have at least a couple of possibilities there. But yeah, apparently... Go ahead, Alex.
I'd side with your wife also on the Sawyer thing. Also, perhaps he wants Sawyer dead because he wants to finish crossing off the list of candidates. You know, he wants them all gone so there's no replacement for Jacob.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
A motive there. But we'll see, I guess. Yeah.
I'm just adding that to my notes.
And what I also liken it to is it's very similar to the episode, I cannot remember the exact title, but I guess in season 4, it might have been at the end of The Constant, when Ben went to go visit Whitmore at the end of the episode, and they kind of, and Whitmore was like, you cannot kill me. I know who you are, boy.
And right, right. Yeah, I'm
exact scene.
Right, I'm glad you brought that up. I almost said something about that, and I lost my train of thought, so thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, exactly. So there, we've already had this notion of there being rules, but we've never ever had, you know, any hint that Jacob has to follow rules or that, you know, his nemesis has to follow any rules. And so that's a really good point. Apparently there are also rules that they have to follow as well, not just the leaders or former leaders of the island or of Jacob's camp on the island, I guess you could say. So that's a really good point, too.
Yeah, and Patrick points out it's The Shape of Things to Come is the name of the episode.
Okay, there we go.
And yeah, thanks, Patrick.
Like, what are these rules that are being set? And who has set these rules? Is it the island's rules or whose?
Yeah, and are they talking about the same rules or what? Yeah, we don't know yet, really.
Right. It's interesting, though, because we keep coming back to these rules, and it almost sort of implies that there's this game that's going on. You know what I mean? Like the whole experience between Jacob and his nemesis is that they've got some sort of a rivalry, obviously. They both have sides that they're on. You know, they believe that they're the one that's right. And it almost seems like a game. I mean, where else do you have rules? You typically have rules in a game, you know, among other, you know, places too. Obviously there are rules in a workplace or things like that. But, I keep coming back to it, this is a game somehow. I mean, not that the whole show is a game, but just that, I don't know. It's funny. I can't quite put my finger on it.
Yeah, and it seems like Smokey doesn't really want to play by the rules and doesn't really want to play the game anymore. I mean, we'll kind of get to some of that later, I think. But definitely kind of seemed fed up with whatever system was in place.
Right, yeah. So Fake Lock uses one of the real locks, oft repeated lines, "Don't tell me what I can't do." He says it again. He yells it at the boy, you know, "Don't tell me what I can't do." And I'm thinking to myself, wow, that is so weird. Like, is he becoming Locke? I mean, it's one thing for him to take his appearance, but now he's like quoting John Locke. It's almost like part of John Locke has become a part of the Man in Black's character, which is sort of bizarre.
Yeah, like I think, you know, there's been definitely this season hints that, you know, he definitely has like Locke's memories, you know, because he was talking about John Locke's last thoughts. And even last season, there's just some moments that are, he's definitely got a bit of Locke in him. You know what I mean? Even if he's, you know, not Locke and not in his body, he's kind of got a bit of his, almost a bit of his soul or something. Just, you know, you see it in the way he talks, and, you know, not just because it's the same actor, but, you know, in the way he interacts with people. But then, and then here, with the don't, he still delivers that line so differently than Locke would. I mean, Locke, when he says, "Don't tell me what I can't do," it's almost kind of like he's whining. But when this guy does it, when this guy says it, when the smoke monster says it, it's very forceful. Definitely not whining, you know, kind of like Locke does, you know.
Yeah. No, here's just as kind of a tangent here. Flyboy Patrick brought up kind of an interesting thought in the chat, referring to, you know, Hurley's luck. And he says, the Flash sideways is derived from the fact that the island is not there anymore. It's at the bottom of the ocean. Hurley is understandable. No crazy numbers, no crazy numbers to play, no terrible luck. And he says the numbers as in the numbers on Jacob's list. Now, this is kind of interesting because when we see that Hurley won the lottery in the season 6 premiere, I assumed that he played the same numbers, but now they gave him good luck because the island is sunk. You know, he's passed that potentially bad luck thing in his life. On the other hand, I think we have to kind of think about, you know, when the timeline of events would have taken place where, because we know Leonard Sims, the guy, was it Sims? I think it was, the guy in the hospital where Hurley lived for a while, got those numbers because he, heard them along with Sam Toomey. And, you know, I don't think we know the exact year that would have happened, but he heard the numbers repeating over and over. So it would have been before Danielle got to the island, because when she got there, she changed the transmission to, you know, her distress call. So it would have had to have been sometime before that, but would it have been far enough back? I mean, would it have been prior to 1977 when the island was sunk? And, I guess that is kind of what determines whether Hurley could have known about these numbers through his friend in the mental hospital. But
towards no, the numbers weren't being broadcast prior to 77. I mean, I guess we have no real proof there, but it would just seem to me that like maybe he just won with a different set of numbers.
I understand that theory, but what doesn't make sense to me is that he would find some other random numbers and happen to win the lottery in this timeline. Like, you know, I mean, everything else, like, pretty much kind of led up to that. You know, I mean, it just seems weird to me. Like, the only way that he won the numbers before was because he had these specific set of numbers. And so if he didn't get the numbers from the same place, where would he have gotten winning lottery numbers? And why wouldn't they have been the same numbers? You know what I mean? It's just one of those kind of I mean, I don't know. The whole right. thing with Hurley winning the lottery.
Chat in the Flash. Oh, God. There's a chat. Oh, man, I really am tired. Patrick is saying that it says Leonard and Toomey heard it in 1988. So there you go. And that would have been the same year that Russo came. So
it was the same year. Where did we get 1988 being the year that?
I know 88 just from 16 years.
Right.
Before.
Right, but I mean, as far as when Sam Toomey heard it.
I don't know. Oh, it's on Lostpedia apparently. Okay, here's where it is. Toomey's wife Martha also quoted 16 years.
Okay. Interesting. So you're right. So it would have been just before Danielle changed the transmission.
It must have been right before.
As a side note, this is one of the things that really got me into Lost. Like from that episode Numbers in season one when I got to experience the Numbers and see an early flashback and all that. This is what really sold me on staying in and watching the episode. Just thought I would share that.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many deep things like this, but at the same time, I think we kind of run into things occasionally that if we look too hard at it, we're going to kind of... I don't know what the exact word is that I'm looking for. You know, it's kind of like looking at a set for, you know, a TV show, you know, like on Jorge Garcia's, blog, the blog where he's putting up the podcast now, he has a picture of the temple and he's standing in the doorway of the temple and it looks an awful lot smaller than it really does on the show. It looks like this gigantic temple. And in fact, it's a lot smaller. The actual, you know, facade, the set is a lot smaller in real life than it appears on TV. And so it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like that. I think sometimes when we look too carefully at certain things, we kind of run into these, you know, apparent or at least possible discrepancies in the timeline and things like that. I don't know if this necessarily is. But again, it makes so much more sense to me that Hurley would have, you know, won the lottery with the same numbers. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me that he randomly in this alternate timeline picks a totally different set of numbers that he gets somewhere else. And he also wins the lottery. It just seems, that just seems way too out there to me. But on the other hand, if it was his destiny, you know.
One could also say that he did still play the same numbers and that he just got them some other way or just thought of them some other way. You know, it could be that simple too, you know.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, okay. Well, in any case, that's enough about that.
Yeah.
All right, so getting back to where we were here. Okay, so Fake Locke uses one of the real John Locke's oft-repeated lines, "Don't tell me what I can't do." And then Richard quietly approaches Sawyer and asks where the man went. and he proceeds to tell Sawyer, you know, "Don't be naive. He's going to kill you. He wants everyone dead. Everyone you care about. All of them. And he won't stop." And he trails off there because he realizes that Fake Locke is approaching. And so Richard runs off into the jungle and doesn't finish his thought. So Richard is trying to warn Sawyer by saying he's going to kill you. So again, this kind of goes back to the theory that the boy who was talking to Fake Locke, when he said you can't kill him, he may have actually been referring to Sawyer, which is interesting. Let's see here. 2004. Okay, so here's another character connection. John runs into Rose, and it turns out Rose Nadler is the office supervisor for this temp agency, and she says that she has terminal cancer. So with the island not being there, she has no place to go that will heal her or prolong her life as the island did in the original timeline. But anyway, she basically tells Locke, you know, you just have to cope with this, you know, injury that you have, and don't, you know, don't let it destroy your life. Just, you know, use it to your advantage, live life to the fullest while you still can.
Yeah, and I really did enjoy that scene. Like, I knew when Locke was there at the desk, I just had a feeling that we were going to see a character that I hadn't seen for a while. And then when Rose popped up, I thought it was good. And it was definitely sufficient in the sense that remembering seeing Rose way back in season one, sitting there on the beach and with Locke, and she sort of confided in him in her condition. And when they both realized, like, okay, this island is something special. This island has some properties that that we both can benefit from. And I thought it was still that same kind of connection, and I really appreciated that scene, I thought.
Now, here's an interesting comment from Flyboy Patrick in the chat. He says, maybe not Locke isn't allowed to kill the candidates. Therefore, Echo wouldn't be on the list, obviously, because Echo was killed by the smoke monster.
Hmm. Yeah, I like that theory that, you know, that makes perfect sense. You know, he can kill some people, but, you know, Sawyer's off limits, you know, Jack is off limits, et cetera. So,
yeah, I think there are some merits to that.
Although I'll just note that in season one, he yanks Locke in, you know, into that hole. I mean, I think that would have been Locke's death had Jack not tossed it, or Kate not tossed the dynamite down there.
Yeah, that is true. Now, with the Echo killing with the smoke monster, I have always thought that, I mean, the smoke monster probably was judging what was best for the island. And let's face it, Echo wasn't the greatest dude in the universe. I mean, he was a drug dealer. He had killed some folks. I mean, so it's naturally understandable.
He pretended to be a priest.
Yeah. And I'm still even not fully sold, too, that the smoke monster is necessarily the bad end of the spectrum.
Well, yeah, and that's, I think we're probably going to get the alternate view, you know. We're going to get the smoke monster's view of, you know, his side of the story, and I don't think ultimately that we're going to end up agreeing with him, but at least we're going to see his perspective, it seems like, over the next, you know, however many episodes, as he seeks to recruit people. You know, he's sought to recruit Sawyer, and maybe he's going to try to recruit some other people now too. So that's definitely something that I think we're going to see more of.
Certainly, and I'm in agreement.
Yeah. I still, I gotta say, despite the Locke thing, I really like that theory. And, you know, as Patrick pointed out in the chat, that, you know, maybe he was going to keep Locke alive, you know, in season one when he pulled him down the hole. And Josh pointed out that Locke also says it wasn't going to hurt him.
All right, so let's move on. 2007, back on the island, Sawyer asks Fake Locke if he's read Of Mice and Men by Steinbeck. And Fake Locke says that it's after his time. Earlier in the chat, Ratface pointed out that John Steinbeck, the John Steinbeck book Of Mice and Men was published in 1937, so that would make Fake Locke nearly 70 plus years old. So that of course isn't too surprising, considering that he was there during the time of the Black Rock.
Right. I was right about to say, well, you know, he's older than that.
Yeah, 70 plus. I mean, I'm thinking Fake Locke is way older than that. At least back to the Black Rock days, I'm thinking.
Well, right. No, I mean, we've got the temple with you know, ancient depictions of the smoke monster and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Then I even got to thinking tonight, this is the first time I've really thought this, but that possibly the Man in Black could have been brought to the island to, I guess, replace Jacob or be the substitute for Jacob, not knowing what time period that would assign him to, but I've thought that as a possibility. So maybe say Jacob came back in, 1300s, even before that. Maybe if Man in Black was the captain of the Black Rock or something in the 1800s and has been there since then. Just a thought.
Well,
kind of came to tonight.
I think the Man in Black has been around since before the Black Rock. I mean, if we're assuming that scene from the season 5 finale you know, if we're assuming that that boat is the in fact the Black Rock, then this guy has to predate the Black Rock. But
yeah, that is true. Yeah, so even before then,
right? So Sawyer says to Fake Locke, "What are you?" And Fake Locke says, "What?" This is more or less a quote, and I may have left out a few words here, but I wrote down as much as I could, as quickly as I could. But this is his response to "What are you?" He says, "What I am is trapped, and I've been trapped for so long that I don't remember what it feels like to be free. But before I was trapped, I was a man just like you. I know what it's like to feel joy, pain, anger, fear, to experience betrayal. I know what it's like to lose someone you love. If you want to shoot me, shoot me. But you're so close, James, it would be such a shame to turn back now." Of course, it doesn't matter whether James shoots him because, you know, he'll pull the same trick that he pulled when he was in inside the statue. When Bram, you know, shot him, he... You know, he became the smoke monster, and the bullet, you know, just sat there on the ground. So, you know, obviously it doesn't really matter whether Sawyer shoots him or not. But in any case, some of the comments that he makes there are kind of reveal a little bit about his origins. He says that he was a man just like Sawyer, and... He says, "I know what it's like to lose someone you love," and so that's a little bit of, you know, potentially his background. Unless, of course, he's lying, but I tend to believe that that part of it is probably true, that he used to be a man just like Sawyer.
And that, I think, is where I got my previous comments from. Whereas maybe he was just a normal man and sort of drawn to the island by Jacob to come and be his substitute. I think that
possibly.
And it started leading me down that line of thought.
Huh. Yeah, that's an interesting theory.
Well, it's true because, I mean, obviously he seems to have some extra abilities, but I think that's what started leading my thinking patterns down that line.
Huh. Yeah, that's a good point. So maybe even the man in black was brought to the island by Jacob. That's a really interesting theory. I've never even considered that before.
Yeah, and tonight is the first that I've thought different things, like, hey, maybe the man in black is like an alter ego of Jacob, or maybe they both came at the same time. But for tonight was the first time that it made me think that, like, maybe Jacob brought him there too, which could possibly explain his slight bitterness toward Jacob and feeling like he wants to really go home and maybe go off island. Though after last week's episode, I thought when he said he wanted to go home, I just assumed he meant he wanted to maybe go back to the temple or go back to a state of peace. But maybe he really does want to go to another physical location off island.
Mm.
thought I had.
Yeah. Josh Spivy from Lost Flashbacks says in the chat, maybe the island is Atlantis and the whole show has been in an alternate timeline. So it was sunk, you know, and then... we're living in that timeline where the island is sunk, you know, because we know it as the lost city of Atlantis, right? And so the whole show has up to this point, up to this season, has taken place in an alternate timeline that led up to the sinking of the island of Atlantis. That's interesting. I know in many times the Kurt Yanko from the Black Rock podcast, he loves to bring up this Atlantis theory. So, I'm sure he'd love that one. I don't know if they're going to bring up Atlantis on us, but that is an interesting theory. I do like that.
Yeah, I do like that idea because I have a friend, my boy B Love, actually, he put me on with watching Lost and he used to pitch, hey, maybe the show has to do with Atlantis and like kind of being the lost city underwater. And when we all look at our DVDs, I mean, we all know if you look at the DVD in the background, there's sort of like a city figure and you see the reflection in the water. And that's when he first pitched it to me, like, hey, maybe it's the lost city of Atlantis. I'm like, yeah, that's interesting, too. That would be a valid theory, especially after us seeing in LAX, the island underwater.
Right. Okay, so interesting theory. Let's see. So still in 2007, Alana says that the man in black can't change his face. Not anymore. He's stuck this way. She's explaining this to Ben, by the way. And so, you know, once again, it's like, how does she know all these things? How is, you know, it's so weird that she knows so many weird little details like that, that, oh, he can't change his face anymore. He's stuck that way now. Where did you get that? Like, how do you possibly know that? She's kind of at least answering questions for us, but it's almost like, well, I mean, maybe Jacob explained all the rules to her sometime before, you know, before we started seeing Alana. We know, of course, that Jacob visited Alana in the past prior to the island. The only flashback that we've seen of Alana is when she's all bandaged up and Jacob comes to apparently rescue her or something. But, so we do know that Jacob has communicated with her off island directly. And maybe that's where he gave her all this inside information about how the smoke monster works and, you know, what the rules are and things like that. I'm just going to have to think that for now, because otherwise it's going to drive me absolutely crazy that Alana knows so much and that Richard and Ben and everyone else don't know a thing. And she knows everything there is to know about the smoke monster. It would really be sad if she died, because she apparently is the only one who knows at all what's going on right now. So Ben eulogizes John Locke, saying, "John Locke was a believer, a man of faith, a much better man than I will ever be, and I'm very sorry I murdered him." And Frank makes a comment about how this is absolutely the weirdest funeral he's ever been to, or something like that.
I thought that was an interesting moment in the show, because I'm sitting there watching Josh, and I'm like, well, first of all, I couldn't believe you said it. Nobody seemed to fully react to him saying that. And then just between that whole shabagle and the man of science, man of faith debacle, I mean, I thought that was an amazing moment, actually, for me.
Yeah. All right, so 2004, John calls Jack's office. of course, Jack gave him the card in the season premiere. And so John calls his office, but hangs up rather than talking to Jack's secretary. John tells Helen that he got fired. And interestingly enough, the timing is impeccable, but John's lost luggage is delivered right then. And so John has her open it, and she sees the knives. He explains to her, he admits that he didn't really go for the conference, and he went to go on a walkabout, and that they sent him home. John says there are no miracles. He basically says to her, you know, if you expect that I'm going to get healed, you know, that I'm actually going to be able to walk down the aisle with you when we get married, he says, you know, you might as well just give up now, because there's no such thing as miracles. And Helen says to him, there are miracles, John. And the only thing I was ever waiting for was you. So a sweet little moment there, and a very different relationship between Helen and John than we had in the original timeline. And as a side note, Helen's shirt says peace and karma across the top, and it says something else across the bottom too, that I wasn't able to make out in the screenshots that I saw, but she has kind of a sort of a hippie t-shirt on. All right, 2007, fake Locke invites Sawyer to go with him down the side of a cliff on the water's edge. And Sawyer falls, but fake Locke saves him, which is kind of interesting. He didn't just want him to die. He wants Sawyer to be actually on his side, apparently. So they go into a cave on the side of the cliff, and Sawyer says, what is this place? There's a scale with a black rock on one side and a white rock on the other side. And these are a little bit larger, in fact, quite a bit larger than the little stones that are in Adam and Eve's pocket from season one. But so there's a black stone and a white stone, and they're sitting on either side of a scale. Fake Locke throws the white rock into the ocean, and Sawyer says, what was that all about? And Fake Locke says, inside joke. And so presumably my wife asked me, she's like, did you get what that meant? And, I assume that, you know, the white rock has reference to Jacob, and the black rock, of course, has reference to him. And, you know, so he's throwing the representation of Jacob into the ocean because he's upset the balance. And, you know, so he's symbolically upsetting the balance on this scale as well. That's what I got out of it anyway. And so Fake Locke, shows Sawyer around the cave and he says, that's why you're here. So there's all these names written all over the cave. that, James, is why you're all here. And the 815 survivors' names, are written on the ceiling in this room. And some of the names are scratched out. And we'll get into that a little bit more in a moment. In chronological order, so with how the show panned out, going back to 2004, Locke, we find out, is teaching high school gym and anatomy, and we find out that he's a substitute teacher. And he goes to the teacher's lounge, and Benjamin Linus, is teaching there, and he's a teacher, teacher, I guess, of European history, which is interesting. so 2007, the question is who wrote all this? That Sawyer poses, I believe. And, the man in black explains his name was Jacob. He died yesterday. And Sawyer asks, why are all the names crossed out? And the man in black says, they're not all crossed out. And he points them out in this order. 23 says Shepherd. And Sawyer says that'd be Jack Shepherd. Number 8 was pointed out next, which was Reyes, Hugo Reyes. 16 is Jarrah, Saeed Jarrah. 42 is Quan. And the man in black actually says, I don't know if it's Sun or Jin. And that's kind of interesting. And Diesel929 in the chat earlier, Paul, said, maybe it is Ji Yan Quan, which is Sun and Jin's child. that's an interesting theory too. Perhaps another possibility about that involves a child, kind of like Aaron, and so forth. number 4 is Locke, and number 15 is Ford, which, of course, the last one that Fake Locke points out to him is his own name, which is up there. And this is the explanation that Fake Locke gives to Sawyer. He says, he was pushing you, James, pushing you to the island, because you're a candidate. He thought he was the protector of this place, and you, James, have been nominated to take over his job. You have 3 choices. Do nothing and see how all this plays out. And possibly your name will get crossed out, and he crosses out Locke's name. The second option is you can accept the job, become the new Jacob, and protect the island. From what? Sawyer says. From nothing, James. That's the joke. And he said something else there, too, and I didn't... didn't get the full quote typed out in time, but Sawyer says, you said there were 3 choices. The third choice, James, is that we just go. We just get the hell off this island and we never look back. And Sawyer says, and how do we do that? He says, together. So what do you say, James? Are you ready to go home? And James says, hell yes. So apparently we've got Sawyer on the man in black's side. And he's ready to leave the island along with him. So we'll see what ends up happening with that. And that's basically where the episode leaves off. So let's see. I've got a couple of side notes in my notes here, but they're ones we already talked about earlier. So does anyone else have anything related to this episode before we get into kind of light spoilers?
Ooh. Well, one thing I would mention is tonight, especially coming off of a Weaker Kate episode, I did enjoy most of the Sawyer lines tonight because he had a ton of hilarious lines. That's tough to say. But I thought this was a solid episode. I did like actually finally getting some resolution, too, to the numbers and seeing that, hey, the numbers are tied to, well, at first I thought the Oceanic Six, but basically some of our losses. So I thought that was great. And other than that, only weak moment, it was kind of weird for me, too, seeing Richard Alpert being made to look like a sucker on the episode. I mean, he got beat down. We saw it in the recap. We saw it later, him tied up and all that. But I'm getting used to that. And hopefully this battle between, I guess, Jacob and Locke will be settled soon. And that's all.
Right. thanks for calling in tonight too. A lot of good comments from everybody. One other thing before we get into the light spoilers is there were some Easter eggs. of course, I mentioned that there were a bunch of names written on the walls, and there are lots of screenshots out there. A lot of them are up on Dark UFO's blog at losteastereggs.blogspot.com. There are also a lot of screenshots up on Sledgeweb's Lost site, lost.qubit.net. So you can check those out. Lostpedia also has a list of names that were crossed out on the cave walls. And so I've pasted that in the chat, and of course I'll put that in the show notes as well. And so there are some interesting names on there. Some that we haven't heard before on the show. Some are familiar to us and others are not. These are the numbers in the order that they show up, in sort of numerical order, I should say. So we have, we've already talked about Locke, Reyes, Ford, Jarrah, Shepard, and Quan, and which correspond to 4, 8, 15, 16, 23, 42, the numbers. And you mentioned too, you know, that we got a little bit of resolution to what the numbers are. Interestingly, in one of the old, what do you call them? The alternate reality games. The first one, I believe it was, we learned about the Valenzetti equation and how those numbers supposedly were, part of an equation to help predict the end of the world. Now we get some, a more canon answer to what those numbers are on the show. Apparently, at least in part, those numbers had to do with these six people who were on Oceanic Flight 815. And so all the numbers, you know, all along, apparently, when Desmond is inputting the numbers, when, you know, and it's funny too, because why those particular numbers? Why did those numbers have to be put into the computer? Because the Dharma Initiative is who built the computer. How did they get those numbers? Unless, you know, I guess that kind of is where the Valenzetti equation kind of comes into play. But, which I don't know, may or may not be canon. I'm not sure if the executive producers ever actually said that that was canon or not, but in any case, outside of those numbers, we actually have a whole bunch of other numbers with names that were crossed out. Not all of these are, very legible. And so I'll read the ones that people have written about on Lostpedia, or people think they've seen anyway, and have, put down in Lostpedia. There's a number 10, which says Mattingly. There is, who, by the way, is the name of one of the others. and he was part of, I guess, Charles Widmore's group of others. there's a number 20 that looks like it says R-O-U-P to whoever wrote this, and possibly Rousseau, they thought. There's a 31 that says Rutherford, and that could be Shannon. Shannon's last name is Rutherford. There's a 34 that says, possibly starts with a C. there's a number 50 who's Troop, spelled T-R-O-U-P-E, not to be confused with Gary Troop, which is T-R-O-U-P. There's a 56, which is Burke, so that could be Juliet Burke. There's a 64, which is Goldstein. There's a 70, which is Faraday. And of course, that could be Dan Faraday. 71, which is Strom, which is Miles' last name. There's a 75 that says Costa. There's a 90 that's Troop and spelled the same as Gary Troop, which, you know, again, comes from one of the alternate reality games. And the executive producer said that that's the name of the guy that got sucked into the jet engine that exploded in the pilot episode. Apparently he was a candidate. 140 is the next number. Lewis, so maybe Charlotte Lewis. 115 looks like Vargas or something like that. 119 is possibly Almeida. And I was kind of joking before we started recording the show. Hey, Tony Almeida from 24? Maybe he's a candidate? I don't know. 159 Chang, so that could be possibly Pierre Chang. 175, we have the name Costa again. Now, that's probably a mistake in whoever wrote up this article on Lost, or that part of the article on Lostpedia, because there's a 75 and a 175. I think somebody just probably misread it. But 195 is Pace, so that's Charlie Pace. 222 is O'Toole. We don't know who that is. 233 is Jones. And there are, you know, there was a Jones who was a soldier of the U.S. Army who was killed by the others. That maybe could be a possibility. there's a B. Jones who was an aunt of Emily Locke and a great aunt of John Locke. Charles Widmore also wore a uniform with the name Jones, although that was presumably the same U.S. Army soldier, though. So there may not, you know, that may be reading into it a little too much. I don't know.
But that's a good point.
There's a 251 that says Yaris, possibly something like that. There's a possibly 269 that says Garner. You know, I'm going to skip most of these. I'm just going to read the ones that have an association. 313 says Littleton, which of course could be Claire or possibly Aaron Littleton. 317 says Cunningham, and Cunningham is one of the others who ambushed Sawyer and Juliet in the jungle following the Flaming Arrow attack. and there's one that's with an... The rest of these numbers I'm going to read, the number was illegible, but some interesting names, though, show up with some of these illegible numbers. One of them is Goodspeed, of course, could be Horace Goodspeed or possibly even Ethan Goodspeed. There's Sullivan, and Sullivan was... the name of a guy, the hypochondriac, is as Jack called him, who, you know, thought that he had a rash that needed to be treated, and he, anyway, kind of a minor character, background character. Pickett, of course, that's the last name of Danny Pickett, who was one of the others. And there's also a Brennan, and Brennan was a member of Daniel Rousseau's team, who was marooned on the island in 1988. So kind of some interesting things, and there's a bunch of other names there too. So it's worth checking out the Lostpedia article or looking at the screenshots and seeing, you know, if you can make out any other names as well. So of course I'll put links up to that in the show notes when I post this episode of the podcast. That's a little bit, that's about all there is, I think, as far as Easter eggs, all that's really come out so far. But, again, some interesting possibilities as far as other people who could have been, among the candidates. Although, you know, again, the numbers 4, 8, 15, 16, 23, 42, those are obviously referring to people from Oceanic Flight 815. And, it was the missing putting those numbers on Desmond's part that caused Oceanic Flight 815 to crash. All right, anything else anyone has in the chat or anything before we get into the light spoilers?
Did I share with the people my theory on the alternate reality? Just the weird theory that I just have a feeling that what we have seen as this alternate reality or the flash sideways, that maybe this is really how the timeline should have taken us. It should have taken us into them going on 2004, hopping on the flight in Australia, and landing in L.A. And the events that we see right now and what we think is an alternate reality, this is the real reality. And everything that's happened on island is kind of like the fake. But I think I might have talked about that a little bit earlier, so I won't even stress upon it too much. So go on, Josh. Take us out.
Okay. So, all right. I'm going to finish up. So we'll start out with some, and these are all pretty light spoilers, but on Jimmy Kimmel Live, the night of the season 6 premiere, there were a couple of things that Damon and Carlton said in their interview with Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel asked them whether Michael and Walt not being on the plane in the new timeline was a coincidence. And Carlton answered that it was fate. Carlton says, and not, you know, not a direct confirmation, but basically Jimmy Kimmel asked, you know, is it a coincidence that Shannon was not on the plane? And they said no. And Carlton said, you know, and then of course they were kind of joking, well, maybe the actress was unavailable. They weren't, you know, giving a direct confirmation of anything. But, and then Carlton says, we hope to see Shannon this year, which is interesting. So again, that could have something to do with maybe just, the actress's schedule or something like that. But, and finally they gave the date of the final episode of Lost. Interestingly, it's on a Sunday, which
23rd.
Yeah. So this is kind of weird. I'm confused as to why they're changing up the night of the finale, but for some reason they wanted to put it on a different night. So it's going to be on Sunday, May 23rd. That will be the final episode of Lost. I mean, you know, presumably they did it for some other reason than that 23 is one of the numbers and it's May 23rd, but I'm sure they had some better reason for that. But in any case, that's going to be the day of the final episode of Lost.
That it is interesting. I wonder if they're going to end up tying it in with some religious implications and on Sunday and death or resurrection or something like that. But I doubt it, but it was interesting. It could just be something simple like they know they could run a 2-hour finale on a Sunday night, too.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. And I do have links to the Damon and Carlton interview. It's posted in two parts on Hulu, and so assuming that Hulu keeps those clips up, I will post those links in the show notes, and I've pasted them in the chat just now if you want to look at those. All right, so getting into the preview for presumably next week, although possibly just upcoming episodes of the season. There were only a few little things that I noticed here. They said someone is coming to the island. They showed a few clips of Claire, or I almost want to call her Claire Rousseau because, you know, she totally looks like Danielle Rousseau now.
Yeah, Rousseau would work.
Claire Rousseau, except that, I don't know. Anyway, so they show a few shots of Claire, and there's also a quick clip of Kate sitting down by, it looked like a stream, and she kind of turns around while she's still sitting, and she points a gun at someone behind her. that's about all I noticed from the preview, so not much of a spoiler there. Let's see. Okay, and the last thing is what Flyboy Patrick put in the chat earlier about the casting call for the teenage boy who we're thinking maybe Jacob or possibly Aaron or somebody else that Fake Locke saw in the jungle. So this is what the casting call says. He's dealt with a horrible family accident. Even at a young age, he has been put in charge of something very important, and it weighs heavily on his shoulders. So that's the description of this teenage boy. So anyway, I won't say anything else about that. So we'll end the show there. Next week, of course, we've got another brand new episode of Lost, and we'll be doing a live show right after that. And once again, I forgot to mention right up at the top as we started recording, but basically... I normally don't get cable TV or anything like that, and in order to watch Lost, I'm not able to get it through the rabbit ears like I always used to for free, and so I'm paying for cable out of pocket right now exclusively just so I can get Lost so I can do the live shows the night of each new episode as it airs. And I'm, you know, I wouldn't have a problem with going back to what I originally did on this podcast, which was record some notes and thoughts and commentary offline and then just posting it for everybody. But if you do like the live shows and you like the interaction and things like that that goes along with it, then, you know, I'm accepting donations, and I would appreciate donations to kind of help pay for the basically $20 a month that that cable is costing me. The basic cable, it's not high def, just the, you know, the cheapest plan that I could possibly get just so that I could get lost on the night that it airs. So if anyone can help me out with that, I would appreciate it. I don't require it, but it does make it possible for me to be able to do the live shows like I have been doing this season. So if you are interested in donating even a small amount, you can go to thelostmeister.blogspot.com and you can find donate links there. And as I mentioned before, you know, I'm not planning on making any money off of this. If for some reason I actually do get more donations than what I need in order to pay off the the cable bill, then I won't accept donations anymore. I'll make an announcement. At this point, I don't think that's probably going to happen because I've only gotten, you know, like one or two donations so far. So, anything that anyone can do to help out, I would appreciate it. All right. Well, thanks everybody. Until next time, stay lost and namaste. If you have a product or service that you'd like to market to thousands of Lost fans, find out how you can become a sponsor of this podcast. Send an email to thelostmeister@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Please check out the Josh Meister's Lost blog for links related to this podcast. The address again is thelostmeister.com. That's thelostmeister.blogspot.com. Thank you, and namaste.